Welcome to Mary's Cup of Tea, the self-love podcast for women. I'm your host, Mary Jolkowski, an author, speaker, and all-around self-love advocate. And this is the podcast that will inspire you to love yourself. Hello, self-lover. Before we dive into today's podcast episode, I want to make sure you know about my two books on self-love. If you're struggling with body image or self-acceptance, then I highly recommend you check out my first book, The Gift of Self-Love. It's a comprehensive workbook to help you build confidence, recognize your worth, and learn to love who you are. Thousands of people have this book, and the 5-star reviews are so amazing. They give me so much life. So I hope that this is something that can help you too. You can get it wherever books are sold by searching for The Gift of Self-Love or go to my website, maryscupoftea.com/book. After releasing The Gift of Self-Love and reading all your positive feedback, I realized that we really needed something to keep us going every single day. So not a deep dive workbook, but maybe like a micro dose of self-love in your daily life, which is why I wrote 100 Days of Self-Love. It's a guided journal with, you guessed it, 100 prompts that cover so many areas of life, including body, identity, purpose, emotions, mindset, relationships, and more. So you can really think of it as a metaphor multivitamin, something to keep you going, or as I like to say, growing on your self-love journey. You can get this journal wherever books are sold as well by searching for 100 Days of Self-Love or go to maryscupoftea.com/journal. It's my mission to share all the self-love tea with you, so I hope that both my books and this podcast can do just that. This summer will mark 3 years since I've talked to my dad, or more specifically, since he's talked to me. It's a very complex situation that I'm not ready to share the details of quite yet, nor do I think I will ever have the words to articulate how difficult it's been, and also very characteristic of him because it's been my whole life that he's been bopping in and out, though this has been the longest time that he's been out of my life for reasons unbeknownst to me. So a couple months ago, I was scrolling through Instagram and I stumbled upon Mina B, who is a licensed social worker and big proponent for psychological safety. And she shared this one post about family estrangement. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to talk to her. So I brought her onto the show to talk about family estrangement and coping with getting ghosted. You'll learn what constitutes an estranged family and how surprisingly common it is. So validating to know I'm not alone. Why people ghost, and of course, how to cope with ghosting in relationships. The important difference between rules versus boundaries. Please listen to that like 3 times over. If you have to rewind, do it. This changed my perspective on boundaries in general and filled in a lot of gaps that I had, and also ways to grieve and find closure for these types of abrupt endings. In case you don't know Mina B, you must. She's a phenomenal speaker with so many powerful messages to share, as you will hear in this podcast episode. Aside from being a licensed social worker and mental health educator, she's also the author of her new book called Owning Our Struggles, which I linked for you in the description, as well as her podcast called Mindful with Mina. So if you enjoy her soothing voice and powerful delivery as much as I did, please go listen to her podcast. She's also the founder of a mental health consulting practice where she collaborates with organizations to help them develop psychological safety. Additionally, Mina is the host of the Very Well Mind podcast, runs an advice column for Cosmopolitan magazine called Free Therapy, and is also a member of the Mental Health Advisory Committee for Wondermind, which is a mental fitness company co-founded by Selena Gomez. Mina has been featured in various media outlets, including Red Table Talk, Peace of Mind, with Taraji, Oprah Daily, Katie Couric Media, and more. So I hope this entire hour-long conversation serves as a gentle yet firm reminder that you have the tools to make peace with even the most complex and difficult things. So without further ado, please welcome Mina B to the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast. Hi, Mina. Welcome to the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast.
Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm doing well. And our topic is a big one. So I'm thinking about how much is okay to share, especially because this is a part of my life that most of my listeners and followers don't really know about. But every time I have hinted to it, and by it, I mean family estrangement, I have a lot of people coming forward saying that they're dealing with it too, and that it's a particularly pesky kind of grief.
Gotcha. Well, I think that a lot of people probably relate to what you're experiencing, because I think family estrangement is a heavy topic. And I do think that thanks to social media, there now is an outlet to talk about it where you feel seen and heard. And there is a sense of relatability that I think a lot of people never really had the opportunity to experience years ago because it was taboo. I will say in our current culture, for certain communities, it still is a taboo topic, but I do appreciate that there are people who are coming forth and talking about their experiences with estrangement online so that other people know that they're not alone in it. But also it encourages others to recognize there still is a path forward for me if I choose to separate from my family.
Mm-hmm. And for me personally, even learning the word estrangement or estranged, well, it didn't even happen until like last year, probably. English is my second language, so I didn't even know that that was like an experience that we had a word for. So even just being able to say, I have an estranged father or I have an estranged aunt, it feels relieving because I don't have to beat around the bush about it. I don't have to try to articulate this unique experience. It's like we have a word for it.
Yeah. And I think when we have language for something, it validates the experience more. Even for you to be able to get to a place where now you're recognizing this is a thing. I didn't make this up. You know, like, yeah, this is real. This is something that people actually experience. And I would imagine it brings some sense of relief to know that, one, you're not the only person going through it, but it is not something that is just isolated to you and only you. It is something happening worldwide, but people aren't talking about it. But there is a word to establish what is happening, which is estrangement, and people making a choice to separate themselves from certain family members or their whole entire family because it is an act of self-preservation and it is an act of safety. And I think safety in itself is something that is evolving over time, because there are practices and behaviors that were once normalized in our past that now we have the language to say this is actually harmful and detrimental to someone's well-being, and therefore it is an unsafe practice. And because you don't see it as a form of safety, then I have to now do the work of cutting ties, because you and I have different approaches or perceptions around this experience. This experience is making me feel unsafe. And for you, it's been normalized, but it's normalized dysfunction. And I think that is a big part of the culture shift that we're seeing in our society, where the things we normalized that used to be dysfunctional, and it still is dysfunctional, we're recognizing it as practices of harm. And when we don't feel safe, a lot of people are now feeling more secure in choosing safety versus people-pleasing and staying stuck in familial relationships because we think we're supposed to.
So true. And I'm glad we're getting there. Though, of course, with all progress, the previous generation, I'm sure, is resistant to it or not receptive or reallocates the blame. So I'm curious, if we were to take a micro step back and first just define estrangement, like what constitutes an estranged family member specifically? Is there like a professional thing? Like, if you haven't talked for X amount of time, then you might be estranged, or maybe it's not so black and white.
I don't think it is so black and white. I think it's a very subjective experience. And estrangement pretty much is when somebody decides to either separate themselves from their whole entire nuclear family system or even blended family system, or they may separate themselves from a particular family member within the family system. And the reason why I say it is subjective is because it is that person's choice to decide whether they want to maintain a relationship with this family system or this particular family member moving forward. And so the simplified definition of estrangement is creating separation between you and your family unit together or you and a family member.
Wait. Then maybe I'm not experiencing estrangement. Hold on. Do we have to read every title this entire podcast? What if I didn't make the choice? Okay, let me just tell you how it is. My father hasn't spoken to me in almost 3 years. I have no idea why. I mean, he's always been in and out, like bopping in, bopping out. But for the first time in my life, we were speaking consistently during the pandemic. Then at one point, out of nowhere, he just falls off the face of the earth, stops answering my phone calls, stops answering my emails. I see that he's read my texts, like, you know how on the WhatsApp, you can see the double check marks. And all I got was a 2-sentence email of like, everything's great. I hope your husband is good. I'm in the country working on my land. So he lives in Russia. So it's complicated, like deep Soviet communist kind of stuff. So all that to say, it's clearly a very unique experience, like culturally complex. And he is a really odd person for me to describe because he's simultaneously like the best person and the worst, most manipulative one. So all that to say, like, I thought that was estrangement. If he was estranged, it would have been my decision to not talk to him. So are we retitling the podcast?
No, we are not. So this is the nuance around estrangement. The thing is, it sounds like you are estranged from your father, but the thing is, you did not choose estrangement. You are on the other side of estrangement. So it is an estranged relationship that your father initiated that now impacts you. And I think that's what can make it feel a little tricky, but the act of estrangement is this separation. And so it sounds as if from the information you're providing that your father made a choice to separate himself. It appears we do not know why, but by him choosing to create the separation, it now lands on you. So you did not choose the estrangement, but you are now the victim of it. And so it can bring up the same complex feelings related to grief because you are not the person choosing to cut ties from this family member, but you are going to experience the blows that comes with when a family member chooses to cut ties with you, when they choose to create a sense of separation from you. And then it also sounds like this extra layer that comes with estrangement or being on the other side of being estranged, which is no resolution and no closure, because it sounds like there's a big question mark as to why did this happen? What did I do, if I did anything at all? Or what are you going through that makes you feel like this is what you have to do because you are too afraid to confront whatever difficulties you're experiencing that has caused you to now sever ties with me? And so that is the other side of estrangement. So it is still estrangement, but I think it's important to be able to process the person who is initiating the estrangement versus the person who is suffering from the estrangement. And in this scenario, your father initiated it, and unfortunately, you now have to deal with the consequences of his estrangement.
Okay. That definitely gives me clarity. So from your professional experience, like how common is it from either side? Like, are there a lot of people who just don't talk to critical family members? Let's say like more or less immediate, maybe parents or children or like siblings. Let's not go into like aunts or cousins or just more distant relatives.
Yeah. So this data is continuously evolving. Most of the time, data around estrangement is specific around parent-child relationships. Studies do show that 1 out of 4 family members are choosing estrangement. But again, that is specific to parent-child relationships. Data is also showing within the last 4 years, especially after the pandemic, that about 27% of Americans are choosing family estrangement. However, like I said, the data does not really drill into, are these people estranging themselves from their siblings? Are they choosing not to talk to their aunts? We also have to be mindful of the different family systems that exist, such as the nuclear family system, as well as blended family systems, because there are people who are in touch with their nuclear family, but estranged from their blended family. And there are some people who are in touch with their blended family, but have chosen to be estranged or are on the other end of being estranged from their own nuclear family. So I think this data is still evolving over time, especially to pinpoint the relationships that are not specifically parent-child, because there are siblings who are estranged from each other, but talk to their parents, right? And so I think it's about being able to utilize that data and recognize when people are being able to make these choices for themselves so that they can feel safe and feel whole. But we also are still exploring how this data is impacting the different family units that exist in our society.
Yeah, of course, we are coming to find that the pandemic has caused quite a mental health crisis that's multifactorial. So it is validating to hear, because my dad stopped talking to me in 2021 out of the blue. So that was like literally mid-pandemic, or as we're trying to get vaccinated and get out of it. Obviously, I spent many sleepless nights trying to figure out how or why. And I think for me, when it sunk in that my father is choosing not to have contact with me for reasons unbeknownst to me, is when I filed a missing person report. I had the police go to their house. And only in Russia can you have the police just WhatsApp you on the phone. But anyway, this cop, I think, just started feeling really bad for me and went over there, knocked on his door, called me back and was like, hey, we can't like proceed with a whole investigation because his lights are on. The neighbors say he's been in and out, like he's alive, he's there. So that was exactly at the 3-month mark. And that's when I was kind of like, okay, this is personal. I'm curious to know, just going back to that question of what constitutes estrangement in terms of, I don't think there's a particular timeline, but like, what usually goes into that decision from the person that is choosing to do so? So like you mentioned, self-preservation, protecting peace. And I know, you know, that can be very complex, I'm sure, depending on which side you're looking at from. So can we speak a little bit more into that to define it? Because I wish that at the 1-month mark, my therapist, instead of shrugging their shoulders and being like, I don't know why he's not talking to you, when I was first starting to feel that, like, I haven't talked to my dad in a while, I wish that my therapist said, hey, you might be dealing with some estrangement. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it definitely is complex, because when you're on the other side of estrangement, and this requires a little more nuance, because you are essentially ghosted by your father, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
When you take that into account, there are various ways that you can look at estrangement. There are people who make the choice to have the difficult conversation. And then, you know, as of today, this person has made it very clear to me that we are estranged. They are not going to speak to me anymore. And this is what I mean about it being a very subjective experience, because in those scenarios, you have clear information regarding how to move forward with this person. 6 months can go by without you speaking, but you can say 6 months ago, we had a really hard conversation and they told me they will not answer my emails. They will not open my letters in the mail. They will not respond to the letters that I send them. They will not pick up my phone calls. They will block me. They will do all of these things. So they informed me of the shift that was coming in our relationship. But when somebody decides to ghost you, it leaves a person hanging on by a thread. And I wonder if maybe that is what your therapist was experiencing with you and didn't want to immediately jump in and say, it sounds like you're estranged, because there really was no evidence at the moment to state that you were estranged. This person just left. Mm-hmm. And when people ghost, sometimes they come back. We don't really have an understanding until you start doing the things like, let me file a missing persons report. Let me contact the police. Let me do all of these things to see if this person is even getting my messages. Are they getting my emails? And as that evidence piles up, the story comes to a close where you're recognizing, oh, wow, this person has been getting all of these letters and text messages and phone calls, and they're making a choice not to respond. And that is when you can recognize, okay, there's more happening here. Because no response is a response to something. But when it is a family member who has been making contact with you and all of a sudden they're not making any contact with you at all, it's a very complex process to go through because you're trying to identify, why did this happen? What did I do? Are there pieces to the story that I'm missing? And so I say that to say that I can imagine how frustrating it may have been on your end too, to be processing this and having your therapist appear as if they're shrugging it off. But I do also wonder if maybe your therapist was existing in that confusion with you, because to go from contact with your father to absolutely no contact, we're still trying to do the investigation of why did this happen. And only time will tell before we can put a label on it, which is, it sounds like this is a form of estrangement. And the only reason why we can put a label on it is because we have evidence to. And the evidence is, mm-hmm. you've done all of this outreach, right? And now that you've done all of this outreach, we see that this person has received your outreach. And we can conclude here that they are making the choice to not respond versus, you know, did something actually happen to your father before I say to you, yeah, you know, Mary, it sounds like you are dealing with estrangement. And we find out 6 months from now, your father was ill or something happened that impeded his ability to communicate with you. And I think that is the tricky part when people choose estrangement in the fashion that your father chose, because what he did stems from, I hate to say it, but an act of emotional immaturity, which is, I did not have the courage to confront you and have a difficult conversation with you. The safest route for me and my feelings would be for me to just disappear and hope that you would figure out why, and hopes that maybe one day there would be an opportunity for me to come back and tell you why. But he chose a method that often leaves people distraught. Is it an act of self-preservation? We don't know, right? In certain scenarios, people are choosing estrangement for that reason. But if you're not communicating why you've decided to end and terminate a relationship, I have no idea what I did wrong. I have no idea if I caused you harm. I have no idea if we can even reconcile. I don't even know what the rupture is because you decided to ghost me. And so I do think I want to add that to the definition here, because although it sounds like it's estrangement, you essentially have been ghosted long term. And I think ghosting brings up another layer of grief and sadness compared to someone knowing that this is the end of our relationship. Whether you choose to acknowledge it or not, I'm letting you know I'm not going to speak to you anymore, versus I'm just going to disappear and hope that you can deal with the grief of that.
A About 3 years ago, I started putting together a playlist with uplifting, inspiring, and empowering songs. I originally did this for myself because I love music of all different genres, and every time I would notice a song that just made me feel good, I would add it to my self-love playlist. And now there are over 300 songs on my Spotify self-love playlist. And these tracks are perfect for when you're getting ready, trying to hype yourself up, or going through a struggle and need a reminder for how badass you are. If you love music as much as I do, then go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist to get the Spotify link. It will ask you for your email so that I can send you this self-love playlist. And full transparency, this will also put you on my email list where I send out a monthly newsletter about stuff I'm thinking about, personal things, things I don't really share on social media, and all the happenings in the Mary's Cup of Tea world. So go to maryscupoftea.com/playlist and let's start jamming to my self-love playlist together. This is important. I did not know we were going to go here. So let's park here for a moment before we switch to the other end of, like, you made the conscious choice to stop talking to somebody, and hopefully you did so respectfully. But let's park here for a second, because ghosting is a huge cultural phenomenon that happens, especially with people dating. And I think, like you said, in defense of my therapist, we had very limited information and she was in that with me. Like, we had no idea what was going on. So right now I'm thinking of my teen sister, who will say so-and-so ghosted me if they opened a text, left them on read, and didn't respond for 12 hours. That's ghosting, you know, from a 15-year-old's perspective, mm-hmm. right? From my friend who's in her 30s and is, you know, going through the ringer in the dating world. If somebody, same thing, doesn't respond in like a timely manner or doesn't always make the first move, even if he was the last one to text back, she expects a double text. So again, she'll like constitute that as ghosting. Mm-hmm. And then of course I have other, you know, friends who literally got ghosted, like I was, by my dad, and are still putting those pieces together and have had to deal with that lack of closure, like you said, that can be so hurtful. So tell us, why the fuck do people ghost other people? Like,
yeah,
how is that? I don't know. I've never been a ghoster. I don't understand why. Like, I think most people deserve a little note as to like, hey, it's not working out.
I agree with you. I don't think there's anything wrong with wanting someone to provide an explanation, especially if there has been an emotional investment in the relationship, or especially if you are my parent, right? If you are my actual parent and we have a parent-child relationship, the least I could get is an understanding and or a letter or an email, something, you know?
You mean that qualifies as an emotional investment? Being my sperm donor?
Right, exactly. I mean, that's a huge responsibility here that you chose. And so I want to just clearly define that ghosting is pretty much when a person makes the choice to disappear and remove all forms of communication long term. So in your situation, it sounds like your father ghosted you, and now it appears that this has now crossed into possible making the choice to estrange himself from you. And in the context of dating, generally, if someone ghosts another person, they will just block them out of nowhere. Maybe you planned a date and next thing you know, you find out you're blocked. You planned a date and the person is not responding or picking up your phone calls. They have just simply disappeared and removed themselves from the relationship. I do think it is important for our own mental health and to manage our anxiety around the relationships we develop with people to recognize that someone choosing not to communicate the way you want them to communicate does not mean that they are ghosting you. Your expectation is somebody should respond to me in 5 minutes. That is simply an expectation. It is not ghosting if they do not do what you want them to do within the time frame that you expect them to. If they take 12 hours to respond, if they take 48 hours to respond, that is not an act of ghosting. That is them showing you how they communicate. If you do not like how they communicate, then you need to be the one to either speak up and say, these are my communication preferences, or you need to decide if this is the type of person that you want to move forward with, because they are letting you know their communication style. So I do want to put this out there, because I think a lot of what's happening in our current culture is we are experiencing things that are hard and we're conflating it for something else. And so ghosting is simply when somebody disappears and removes themselves permanently from your life. Somebody choosing to do things how they want to do it is not them ghosting you. And again, as people, we have choice. We can decide if we want to maintain a relationship with that person, or we can decide if we want to communicate. But when somebody shows you who they are, you get to decide if I want to tolerate communicating with someone who takes 48 hours to respond to me. So I do just want to put that little pin there before we continue on in this conversation. But why do people ghost? Generally, it comes from a few things that I have been paying attention to through internet behavior and reading some commentary. And there are some people who feel like the relationship has not progressed enough where there was ever an emotional investment. So therefore, they feel like they are removing themselves from the situation or from the relationship, and they actually don't see it as a form of ghosting. So to use dating for an example, there are people who feel that I matched with you. We talked maybe for 5 minutes. I wasn't interested. And therefore, we haven't done the work of developing a bond that I wouldn't expect you to even think that I owe you an explanation here, because we don't know each other. We also have not gone deep enough to expect anything of one another. We had a 5-minute conversation. And so that is one of the things that I find is coming up for a lot of people in the dating scene, where they're saying that I chose separation from this thing because there was no investment, there was no soul tie, there was no connection, there was no bond that was developed in the first place. And so because of that, I don't see it as an act of ghosting. I kind of see it as an act of separating myself from the person and moving on. Now, there are some people who go as far as investing into the relationship or taking from the relationship and doing things like planning dates, being on the phone a few times a week, going on dates a few times a week, a few times a month, and the next thing you know, they're gone. Poof.
I have a friend who got ghosted after 9 months, the day she was supposed to move in with the guy. Like, her shit was packed to move and he ghosted. I don't know if you would, but I would probably say, like, that's traumatizing.
Oh, absolutely. It can be very traumatizing. And I think that that is an actual example of how ghosting is synonymous with emotional immaturity, where you can invest 9 months of yourself with someone, and they can take from you within that 9 months, but also invest back into you for those 9 months. And you're making plans. And instead of this person engaging in the maturity to have a conversation to say, I don't want this to go any further, they decide not to. And they choose ghosting as a way to cope. Or for some people, because they lack empathy and because they lack compassion and they don't have a conscience, they don't even realize how detrimental their actions are. And so it is a very nuanced situation, and it is a interesting phenomenon that is taking place in our current culture. And I don't know if maybe because we have the internet now and we have social platforms where we can share our experiences, that it almost seems as if ghosting is on the rise. I'm not sure how often people were being ghosted maybe 5 years ago or even 10 years ago. But I will say that often it is the result of somebody who doesn't have a conscience, and therefore they lack empathy and compassion with others. This can definitely be a trait of narcissistic personality disorder, where because they struggle to have that empathy, they don't even realize the pain that they're causing other people because they are so self-centered and they are so geared toward their own self-preservation that their needs come before your own. And so after 9 months, if I'm ready to discard you, I'll just do it because I don't need you anymore. And that can be the act of a very narcissistic person. And then there are some other people who may not struggle with narcissistic personality disorder, but they do struggle with emotional maturity and they struggle with having healthy conversations. There are people who don't know how to break up with people. There are people mm-hmm. who do not know how to end things because it makes them so uncomfortable that it is destabilizing, and they would rather run and hope that you will figure it out versus have the hard conversation and feel like they've done harm because they see that they hurt you. They don't know how to deal with the pain of hurting other people. They also don't know how to stand firm in their own desires, because there are some people who feel like, well, if I'm hurting you, now I have to self-neglect to make you feel better. So I don't want to move in with you, but because you seem hurt by the fact that I don't want to move in with you, I'm just going to let you do it. And now I'm suffering. So the easiest method here is for me to just disappear, you know? And so I just say that because it's nuanced. It is a very nuanced approach, but regardless, it's unhealthy. It is something that, you know, is very painful to overcome if you are on the receiving end of being ghosted. And there are a variety of reasons for why some people do it.
Yeah, I think this leads into my next question about, like, how does one decide how far we should go to get closure? Because in speaking with my friends who have experienced this level of ghosting, one in particular, the process that she kind of explained to me is she was like, at first, I was annoyed. You know, why isn't he answering my texts? Then I had a moment of anger where I'm like, what the hell did I do to deserve this? And then I had a moment of like, wait, what if something terrible happened and I'm, you know, misinterpreting it and I have to make sure that he's okay? And then goes through, you know, I don't know, friends or trying to see if they're alive, and suddenly you see a post on social media and they're totally alive and well and hanging out with other people, right? And then that's when it really sinks in that, like, I got ghosted. And like you said, you wake up and you're just blocked. And that's where the deep pain and hurt sets in. And I think with this one friend that I'm thinking of, she years later reached out or something along those lines when she was like in his side of town to see like what happened all those years ago. Because I think part of what's difficult about ghosting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost a form of manipulation where, because the ending was so abrupt, your brain is trying to make sense of it and needs to obsess over it in order to do so, because there is such a lack of answers. So I don't know if I'm onto something there, but basically all I'm saying is like, the guy could have been like not that great. And if he just had the decency to break up normally, it would have been like a normal, healthy breakup. But because it was so abruptly severe, it makes you believe, like you said, there's some narcissism sometimes there, you know, and it makes you fall into that trap of like being in a relationship with a narcissist where you get even more infatuated with the idea of them. Anyway, I'm going to pause there. How do we decide mm-hmm. how far we should be going? Like, should I be flying to Russia to try to figure out what's going on with my dad and why he's not talking to me? Because a part of me is like, maybe I should be doing whatever it takes. Like, he's my father. You know, I have the right to know. Or what if he's like really unwell and needs me to do that, right? Or something, you know, in between. How does one decide?
Yeah, so here's the thing that I always tell people to reflect on. It is not a matter of should. It is a matter of what do you feel comfortable doing for yourself? Do you actually want to fly to Russia to check on the well-being of your father, to confront your father? Is that the thing that you think is going to give you peace at night? Is that the thing that you think is going to help you go to bed and not have anxiety? Is that the thing that you feel like is the missing piece to the puzzle? Because often we don't know until we know. And sometimes we have to do this work to understand what is actually happening. But also, one of the things that we have to be doing in the midst of that is recognizing, even in the midst of not knowing, information is being given to us. Because your father has given you critical information that he does not want to be contacted, right? And can you be at peace with that? And if you can't, you can decide if you want to go the extra mile. It's the same situation with your friend. As we experience grief, it's like those five stages of experiencing depression, anger, bargaining, in denial, having all of these difficult feelings that arise because the ending was so abrupt that we were not expecting this. Our nervous system wasn't expecting it. Our body wasn't expecting it. But now you got access to critical information. He's alive. This man that you were about to move into, he's posting on Instagram. So that's information. We don't like that is information because that tells us the actions that this person chose was to ghost me. This person literally decided to up and leave me, and that makes me so hurt and distraught and angry. And you have a right to experience something like that because it is a very abrupt thing to go through. And it is a very unfair thing to go to when you give someone 9 months of your life and you have them set their lives up to believe that they're going to move into you. What if I, you know, ended my lease? What if I shifted jobs or shifted my work schedule or did all of these things because we were planning together? Someone has a right to be upset. But when you know the truth, you have to ask yourself, when is the truth finally going to settle in and be enough for you? Because now here you are 5 years later, still wanting to know why, because the truth wasn't enough at the moment when you found out. And you have to ask yourself, why wasn't the truth enough? Why was him ghosting you not enough for you to recognize the person that he was? Why was him ghosting you not enough for you to recognize that maybe this isn't really the person for you, whether you get an understanding of it or not? And there are some people who decide, I just want to know. And that is the itch that I want to scratch. And my perception of that is, well, if that is an itch you want to scratch, then do it. But also, we have to remember, we also have to be in tune with ourselves, practice enough self-attunement to know, when am I ready to open this door? Because what if I do reach out after 5 years? What if I do take the trip to Russia and I'm confronted with an even more difficult truth, such as, why are you here? I didn't ask you to be here. Why are you texting me? I blocked you. Didn't you see that I blocked you on all my social media channels? I've laid out the foundation to let you know I don't want to talk. And that is a very, very hard truth to swallow. But I say it that way to be very straightforward, because sometimes in the midst of our hurt, we fail to see what is happening in front of us. And we say to ourselves, I need closure, but the truth has unfolded already. And there are times where it's okay to recognize that even though the truth is happening right in front of me, I don't think I'm ready to swallow it. I don't think I'm ready to own it. And if these are the extra steps that I have to take to finally own the truth, I'm going to do it. But you also have to realize that by going the extra mile, there's a possibility that you are compromising your own well-being and your own mental health. And you have to ask yourself, at what point does it stop? Because you can chase someone forever and that person can run forever. So at some point, you have to ask yourself, when do I stop the chasing? And I think that is the hardest part of this, but that is also the part that has to be embraced, because the more you chase, the more you deplete yourself of your energy, your time, and your resources. And that is how things backfire, when we don't realize the person that we're trying to hold on to is actually running. And that is the truth that I leave here, because I don't think the answer is this is what you're supposed to do. The answer is, at what lengths are you willing to go? What are the things that you are willing to sacrifice? And what is the truth that you feel like you are waiting to see happen in front of you that hasn't already happened?
Yeah. Yeah, that those are the hard questions. It seems like closure is akin to forgiveness, in that it happens within ourselves. It doesn't matter whether or not you got an apology or whether or not they told you to your face why they were leaving. It doesn't change the facts, and it doesn't change the hurt and grief. And we try to fill in the gaps thinking that one more piece of information would make it easier, but you said it so eloquently, it doesn't. And when somebody shows you who they are, like, accept them for who they are.
Right. And I think that that is so hard to do, of course, because we love people and we don't want to lose people. But that's what I mean, where you have to have active support systems in place when you realize I'm just not at a place of acceptance yet. And by not being in a place of acceptance, there are going to be some resources that you run through. You are going to deplete yourself of your energy, but you have to be willing to say, I'm okay with that, because I really want a different answer here. I really want to have this conversation with you, Dad. Why did you do this? And you telling me congratulations on your anniversary or things like that, it's not enough for me. And that is also okay to be in that space. But you just have to ask yourself, am I willing to drain myself of the resources that it will take for me to get the answers that I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm. And said resources could be, and very much are, the emotional ones too.
Exactly.
I have these like two perpetually conflicting sides of me, where on one hand, I'm stubborn as a goat and I'm like, I'm just going to ghost them back. And I'd be lying if I told you that I was particularly adamant on reaching out, and I wasn't passive aggressive with the wedding photo that I sent, with absolutely no context or words whatsoever, you know, like, obviously I'm not at peace enough to handle it with the utmost of emotional maturity. And then, nevertheless, there's this other part of me that has a mindset of, no, I should do whatever it takes because life is short. And I think it's different when it's potential relationship that didn't work out versus my own father. I'll give myself that grace. But yeah, there is a part of me that's like, I should go to the ends of the earth to see him one last time or figure out what the hell happened. But one thing that I love how you talk about this, like, this was aha moment on top of aha moment for me when I first heard you explain the difference between rules and boundaries. Could you explain the difference between rules and boundaries when it comes to our personal, familial, or intimate relationships?
Yes. So a rule is a guideline that we put on other people. And so I want you to think about rules in a context of society. If you have a driver's license, while you're driving, there are a bunch of rules regarding traffic violations and speed limits. You're not supposed to go past 25 if you're in a school zone. If there's a red light, you're not supposed to drive through a red light. That is a rule. A rule happens in society. It also happens in our relationships. And again, these are the guidelines that we impose on other people. It is us telling other people what they can or cannot do. However, a boundary is a rule and a set of guidelines that we put on ourselves. I utilize boundaries every time I'm in my car and I see there's a red light, I stop. I decide that I am going to stop because I recognize there's a rule, there's a consequence for breaking this rule. I don't want to deal with the consequence of that. So therefore, I'm going to impose a limit on myself, which is I'm going to stop at this red light. Boundaries always start with I because I can only control I. I can only control me. Rules, however, always start with you. So Mary, when you come over, you need to take your shoes off before you enter my house. You can decide, Mina, I'm not going to do that. And my boundary will be, I'm going to leave you on the porch. You must want to hang out in the backyard because I already told you to enter my home. You have to take off your shoes. And my boundary is, people cannot walk around my house with shoes on. So therefore, if you decide that you don't like my boundaries, the rules that I put in place regarding of my home, I have to set the boundary here, which is the limitation. What limit am I going to set between you and I? And so I think it's really important for people to use discernment in recognizing what a rule and a boundary is, because I'm recognizing a lot of people are feeling frustrated because they keep saying people are crossing my boundaries. And what's really happening is people are disregarding your rules. Your boundary is, how are you going to respond when people disregard your rules? Again, utilizing a very everyday example, because there are rules in our society. If you run a red light, you have a right to get pulled over. You're going to get a ticket in the mail. You might even get points on your license, because these are consequences the law has set. And the law said that if you break this rule, these are the limits we're going to put in place. We're going to issue you a ticket. And so I really want people to start rethinking the boundaries that they think that they have, because I realize that what's happening is people keep saying, you're crossing my boundary, when really what's happening is people are disregarding your rule and you're forgetting that you are not a powerless person. You can decide how you want to respond to someone when they make a choice to disregard your rules. And when we utilize that sense of discernment in our relationships, there can be a greater level of peace, because we see that we actually are able to control ourselves and we can impose limitations on how we interact with people and what we're willing to tolerate, instead of feeling like the only way this relationship can flourish is if I can control you. I'm not going to be able to control anyone. I can set these rules and they don't have to follow it, but I also can say, as a result of not following this rule, this is how I am going to react to you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Oh my God. If you're not doing so already, to my listeners, please rewind and re-listen to that little part. I think it's so important. And what I'm hearing you say is that a rule is almost a precursor to a boundary, meaning that following the rules, whether they're spoken or unspoken, and again, sometimes they are unspoken, and then we want people to read our minds and get frustrated when they don't, or maybe they're spoken, and same thing, we get frustrated when people disobey our rules but don't have the courage to do anything about them. So following the rules is on the other party, but enforcing the boundary is on me. Is that correct?
Correct. That is exactly what I'm saying. Again, our boundaries are often shaped by the rules that we have in the relationships we want to exist in. So my boundary will be, I don't tolerate people yelling at me. Therefore, my rule is, you cannot yell at me in a conversation. You see, my boundary could be, I don't let people walk around in my house with shoes on. Therefore, my rule is, when you come over, you have to take off your shoes. My boundary could be, I don't let my child stay up past 10 p.m. because they have a bedtime. Therefore, the rule is, when you babysit mom, when you babysit dad, when you are with the kids, they have to go to bed at a certain time, or I'm not going to let you babysit, because these are the boundaries that I have in place with my children. So both of those things are deeply connected to one another. And that is why I say, when we recognize what our boundaries are, what the limits we want in place in our relationships, we can now discern what the rule is that we need to express to other people.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I would be remiss if we didn't talk about ways to process that type of loss of family estrangement or grieve the other side of being ghosted. How do we do this, especially when the experience is so difficult to put into words and also comes with quite a bit of shame?
Yeah, I think that grief is one of those things that consistently ebbs and flows, and it's really hard to tell someone how to grieve. My advice is always to give yourself permission to grieve, regardless of how that looks. Grieving could look like crying. Grieving can look like having the same conversation with your therapist for weeks or for months. It could look like taking yourself on a vacation to explore something new. It could look like going to a museum to see art and allow yourself a new experience. It could look like going to a restaurant and people watching and just allowing yourself permission to think about what happened to you and process what happened to you and allow all of that to just overflow, you know? And so it can be very hard to say this is the formula because there is no formula. But I will say that there are healthy ways that we can grieve. And the healthy ways that we can grieve is by, one, acknowledging the pain that we're feeling and honoring it. We don't have to pretend to be okay. We also don't have to blame ourselves for what happened, especially if there is no evidence to prove that we are at fault. And if there are times where we recognize we are at fault, how can you show yourself self-compassion through recognizing that you are an imperfect person and maybe you cause some harm? And unfortunately, this is the consequence that you have to go through, but this consequence doesn't have to define the totality of your life. This is an experience. And how can you let this experience shape you instead of letting the experience define the rest of your life? And that can be really hard, but I think that is one of the ways that we overcome shame, because shame means I am bad. And the moment you get into a space of thinking I am bad, it can be hard to pull yourself out of that, because it's almost as if saying, what is the point? Because I am this deeply terrible person. There is no forgiveness. There is no coming back out of this. And compassion says, I'm a person who messed up and I have the ability to do better. That is why we need self-compassion. Self-compassion means I messed up and I own the consequence of that, despite how hard the consequence is. And I am also someone who is worthy of love, who is worthy of care, and who is worthy of starting all over. And so there are different things that I think people can be doing in the midst of their grief. I truly encourage, especially in this current climate around estrangement, to see if there are support groups. This is actually the one time I really encourage group therapy versus one-on-one therapy, or at least doing group therapy in conjunction with one-on-one therapy, because one-on-one therapy helps you to dig at the bottom of the pain. But group therapy helps you recognize that you don't have to carry that pain by yourself, because there are other people who acknowledge the pain, who experience that same level of pain. And you can bring that pain and transform it into love and care when you have other people around you who know what you're going through. And I'm a really, really huge advocate for group therapy. And so I do encourage people who are experiencing estrangement being on the other side of estrangement, or people who are experiencing ghosting, being ghosted long-term by a family member because there was no communication around the estrangement, to find support groups, to figure out ways that you can cope, but you can cope in community and find another place where you belong. Because often when we are estranged by a family member, when you are on the other end of it, you can sometimes feel as if you don't know where you belong, because your family is your first place of belonging. And when your family makes a choice to cut ties from you, it can be really hard to feel as if you belong anywhere in the world. And that is something that brings up a lot of grief as well. And so I do encourage people to to identify their chosen families through peers, through friendships, and even through supportive networks and professional networks, so that you can be reminded that you are still a worthy being. And there are going to be times where in these spaces, you have to be held accountable, maybe because of what happened, or you might find that you didn't do anything at all. And now you just need someone to sit with you in the midst of this pain and hurt and sadness, but you also want to feel like you belong somewhere.
I'm really glad you brought up some of those more extroverted focused activities. Like you said, even going to a museum, going out for dinner, like taking yourself out into the world. Group therapy, of course, is one of the primary ones of that, because I was just going to say that, you know, leaning into your chosen family and building and nurturing those relationships that aren't necessarily blood related reminds you that, yes, our parents are probably the ones that can fuck us up the most. And our friends and our chosen family are also the ones that can heal us the most. So I really, really love that, because I deeply believe that we heal in community and not isolation. So thank you so much, Mina, for all the wisdom that you've shared with us today. And thank you on a personal level as well.
Thank you, Mari. Thank you for having me on the show.
One last thing before we farewell, my self-lovers. If you've been enjoying the Mary's Cup of Tea podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you could leave a review on Apple or rate the show on Spotify. You can do this by searching for the show Mary's Cup of Tea. Scroll all the way down on Apple Podcasts and you'll see stars where you can click one of the stars and leave a few kind words. It just means so much to me because I'm so behind the scenes when I'm podcasting, so I don't really get to see the impact of the show unless you leave a review. And on Spotify, there's just a button that says rate the show and it'll let you put however many stars you want. Your feedback helps the podcast grow, and as someone whose love language is words of affirmation, your kind words mean the world to me. Thank you so much for supporting the show and helping me spread the gift of self-love. I love you all so much, and I will talk to you in next week's episode.